So I've got something exciting to share. My book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is now available for pre-order. It's about rethinking your drinking, not because you necessarily have to, but because deep down you know there's more waiting on the other side. It's about creating space for clarity, for calm, and the version of you that doesn't need alcohol to cope. So if you're looking for a refreshing take on alcohol identity and desire, just tap the link in the show notes and pre-order. Right, let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink podcast with me, your host, Anna Donaghy. You're tuning into a Q&A episode where I answer the questions asked by podcast listeners or my coaching clients. We're going to be covering a wide range of topics relevant to you if you're rethinking and reshaping your relationship with alcohol. Everything from how to face common challenges, how to overcome personal doubts, how to manage the inevitable emotions, and so much more. Thank you for engaging and asking these questions, and for showing up to hear my thoughts and perspectives. Alrighty, welcome back. Now, we haven't done a Q&A episode for a while, so I'm really pleased to have received some listeners' questions relating to the theme of resistance and release that we've been talking about recently. Now, I'm just going to read you them. I've got a few here, actually. Hi, Anna. I've been listening to the recent episodes about resistance and shame, and I really recognize myself in them. I know I'm someone who holds on and holds things in, always wanting to be in control, but I do want to let go. I just can't seem to. Why is that? What's stopping me? Okay. Hi, Anna. I keep hearing you talk about softening and release. And I realize I don't even know what that feels like, although I think I know what it means. I'm so used to holding it all together that relaxing almost feels unsafe. Why can't I just let go even if I want to? Hi, Anna, I've been alcohol-free for a while now, but I'm realizing that even without drinking, I still feel tense and restless. My guard is always up. It's like I've taken away my ability to relax. I guess she means through the alcohol, but I haven't learned how to actually relax. Why can't I let go? So yeah, these questions mirror conversations I often have with coaching clients as well. So to recap, we have been talking a lot about what we resist, the ways that we sort of tighten and defend and hold ourselves together, with alcohol very much being part of that pattern, you know, the shortcut to release, or at least to mimic release, a kind of counterfeit release, if you like. So it's the way that we use it to borrow a feeling of ease, to quiet the noise in the mind, and to let the body feel, even if just for a moment, what safety is supposed to feel like, okay? Or we can use it to kind of chemically signal to the body that it can soften and to quieten the mind again and to mimic the feeling of peace that we're craving. So we're sort of using alcohol to convince the body to relax for a while. And the heart of what we've been basically saying is that alcohol is a substitute and it's a counterfeit mechanism for something that the body genuinely needs, which is relief and safety. And that underneath this ritual is a nervous system that doesn't really know how to let go on its own. We've been learning a lot about the nervous system recently. We've explored what we're resisting. So how shame can keep us small, and how fear and trauma can keep us braced, and how resistance can quietly run the show without us realizing it. So today, I want to try, always in my layman's terms, really, only from how I understand these things to work, I'm going to try and answer what each of these listeners is essentially asking, which is, why can't I let go? Why can't I let go? Because even when we've put down the glass, even when we truly want to release and to relax and to trust, something inside us can stay locked. And of course, that can leave us thinking, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I let it go? But here's the thing. there is always a very good reason why you can't. It's not that you're broken or weak, although that will be the story we tell ourselves, undoubtedly. It's just that somewhere along the way, your body has learned that holding on was the safest thing to do. So in this episode, we're going to look at what keeps us gripping so tight and how to begin to loosen that grip from the inside out. So a question that's kind of been sent in, a Q&A episode, but it's going to give us a bit of a tool as well, toolbox/Q&A episode, all right? And obviously the tools that we want to look at are not ones that have us reaching for another shortcut, obviously, because that's the behavior we're rethinking. But we want tools that can create that sort of safety and self-trust and self-worth, okay, that make real release possible. When anyone comes to me in coaching and says, I just can't let go, I always hear the same sort of silent truth beneath it, really, which is that they've had to hold on. For many of us, control has become our coping strategy. Holding it all together has made us feel safe and capable and acceptable. And if you've lived through stress and loss and trauma, or just years of overfunctioning, your body might not trust what would happen if you stopped gripping. So that is not failure. That is protection. And that's what we've been learning about the nervous system, right? Your nervous system has learned that safety equals control. So even when you want to release, part of you still believes that letting go could mean danger, rejection, or collapse. So perhaps the question isn't, why can't I let go? The real question is, what am I afraid might happen if I do? Now, for some people, it's the fear of falling apart, that if they stopped holding it all together, everything will just unravel. For others, it's the fear of feeling, of finally touching, you know, the sadness or the anger or, I don't know, the loneliness that's been sitting just underneath the surface. Sometimes it's the fear of losing control, of not knowing who we'd be without the tension and the striving or the drink that sort of kept it all in place. For other people, it's the fear of being seen, that if they soften, people might see the truth of what they've been carrying or what they've been hiding. And often, and I think this is probably the most human fear of all, it's that if we let go, no one's going to be there to catch us. Okay? So there is a real point of reflection there. What am I afraid might happen if I let go? And just notice that question in your own life. Where are you holding on, and what does that tightness think it's protecting? Because the body cannot release until it feels safe. When we're in fight or flight mode, I don't know, rushing around, performing, overthinking, the nervous system will stay on alert. And this is why trying hard to release, throwing logic or mental tools at it, so often backfires. Because trying is still a kind of tension. It keeps us in the same state we're hoping to escape. You can't think your way out of a body that feels unsafe. The shift happens not when we do more, but when we let the body know it's safe enough to do less. And that's the heart of it. In fact, it's a point worth restating it, so I will. When we are in fight or flight, the body is primed for action, not rest. Logic, tools, and shoulds belong to the thinking brain, but the holding on lives in the body. So when we try hard to release through mantras and self-talk or willpower, we're actually applying more effort, more control, more doing, and the nervous system reads that as just further evidence that it's not yet safe to let go. So it's really counterproductive. Those common frustrations, I'm trying really hard to let go. However hard I try, I can't let go. They speak of that effort and attempted control. So the real key isn't forcing release. It's creating conditions where release can happen naturally. Now, this is going to bring us into something which we don't talk about enough. Sometimes we genuinely can't let go because deep down, we don't believe we deserve to feel at ease. I'm going to explain what I mean by that, okay? When people say, I just can't relax, they often think it's a mechanical problem, something about stress or busyness or overthinking. But underneath, there's actually very, very often a belief problem, a deep, almost unconscious conviction that ease is for other people. Now, that conviction can come from years of conditioning. So growing up in environments where love or approval had to be earned, so rest feels indulgent and even unsafe. Or cultures or workplaces that glorify doing and productivity and control, so stillness feels like a failure. Or family dynamics, this is a massive one, family dynamics where tension was normal, so calm feels unfamiliar and even suspicious. Or, unfortunately, experiences of trauma that have taught the body that safety never lasts, so it stays on guard, even when life is objectively fine. When these beliefs are running in the background, ease can actually trigger anxiety because part of us thinks, if I soften, something bad is going to happen. If I stop managing everything, I'm going to lose control. If I relax, I'm going to be caught off guard again. So the reason we can't let go isn't lack of skill. It's lack of permission. We don't yet believe we deserve ease. Or in other words, somewhere along the line, we've learned that calm had to be earned and that rest was a reward for doing enough, being enough, proving enough. And if your nervous system has lived most of its life on high alert, ease can actually feel unsafe, even though it's what you most crave. So part of the work, when you think about it like that, part of the work of release isn't learning a new technique, it's unlearning the old belief that you have to earn peace. So the first step in letting go isn't about technique and skill, it's about permission. The hardest part isn't finding help, it's believing you're worth the help. And when you've spent years soothing with a glass of wine, keeping it all together for everyone else, you can start to believe that you're only valuable when you're functioning, not when you're feeling. But real release begins with believing you deserve peace and that you deserve to feel safe. Now, sometimes that means seeking support. Okay, so therapy or trauma-informed coaching or group work, whatever speaks to you really. And that's what I kind of call the macro release, the big, courageous step of saying, I don't have to do this alone. I am allowed to receive, and I am worth the effort it takes to heal. That's where real softening starts, not in fixing the tension, but remembering your worth beneath it all, because you're not someone who needs to be fixed. You're someone who needs to be supported to feel safe enough to let go of the armor that kept you safe, or the armor that alcohol can help to create. And this, when you think about it, is a fundamental shift from self-improvement mode of fixing, striving, efforting, into self-acceptance and support mode of being held, receiving, resourced, safe. Okay. Oh, and by the way, if you're listening to this and thinking, I don't even know what self-worth feels like, then please know that's okay. You don't have to start with belief. You can start with possibility. When your sense of worth has been eroded for years by criticism and trauma, or years of coping, It's not something you can suddenly access by saying affirmations. I'm not even going to pretend, of course, that it is. But it can start in much smaller, quieter ways. It begins by treating yourself as someone worth caring for, even if you don't feel it yet. So that might look like making yourself a proper meal instead of skipping dinner, or booking that doctor's appointment that you've been avoiding, or asking for help when you need it. Each of those small actions says to you, says to your nervous system, I matter enough to take care of. And over time, that care plants the seed of worth. You don't have to feel worthy to begin. You just have to act as though you are and let the feeling catch up later. Because worth isn't something you earn or perform. Okay, it's something that you can reclaim slowly by showing up for yourself in all the ways that you were never shown up for. And I call these little moments of micro-release, the small, real-time ways that we can remind the body that it's okay to loosen its grip. Now, these little moments of micro-release are just little acts, little ickle acts that have cumulatively big impact. So I'm talking about things like, opening a window and stepping outside so that you can feel air on your face and remind your nervous system that there is a world beyond your head, okay? Choosing clothes that feel really good to you, on your skin, not ones that hide you or impress everybody else, just the ones that make you feel comfortable and hugged. Eat lunch away from the laptop. That's a big one. I'm always saying, just even 5 minutes of mindful eating says my needs are not an inconvenience. Notice your language. I talked about this several episodes ago. You know, when you catch an inner I should do this, I ought to do that, soften it so I could. That tiny shift in self-respect is just fabulous. And, you know, our language is so leading in how we view ourselves, okay? In fact, that tiny little shift is self-respect in action. Take a 5 minute break because you're allowed to pause. You know, cook or assemble something simple and real. You know, it doesn't have to be elaborate, but just nourishment. Nourishment is self-worth in edible form. And of course, you know, try and replace the drink come an evening with a calming ritual, a bath, a walk, a few deep breaths at an open window that just tells yourself, I am safe and I can exhale now. So don't dismiss the power of these gestures. None of them is going to fix everything, but together they whisper to your nervous system that you matter. And that's how self-worth begins. Not as a kind of magical belief that you suddenly wake up with one morning, but as evidence that you build day to day, day by day, through these sort of small acts of respect. And of course, it's not a switch that flicks overnight, as I said. You know, it's slow work. And as often, you know, two steps forward and one back, there'll be days when you forget, you know, when the old patterns return and when your body still tenses, even though you know better now. But over time, these small acts of self-care begin to stack up, and they are signals of safety. They don't erase big pain, but they offer your nervous system moments of rest, and they can become proof points, signals that you're no longer in danger. Now, often we resist release, not because we can't, but because we're afraid of what might rise to the surface if we stop controlling. So we've learned to equate tightness, if you like, with strength, but actually it's a form of guarding. So consider, what if letting go isn't the same as losing control? What if letting go is actually finally trusting that you're held? And I don't want that to sound like a sort of wanky coaching phrase, so I'm going to try and explain what I mean about that being held. It's all about trust. And its deepest level, letting go, is all about trust. When you look beneath all the tension, control, and striving, the core question that sits quietly underneath is, can I trust that I'll still be okay if I stop holding everything together? And that question can show up in several different layers. Firstly, can I trust myself? Can I trust my own feelings, my own choices, my resilience? If I stop managing every outcome, will I still be able to find my footing? So many people drink to manufacture a feeling of trust, that brief sense of I'm fine now, because real trust in self feels fragile or untested. But releasing means beginning to believe, okay, that I can meet myself sober, unarmored, and still survive the feeling. Okay, can I trust myself? Spoiler alert, yes you can, right? Second layer, can I trust others? Can I trust that if I soften, someone will be there for me? Not to fix me, not to judge me, but just be there for me. Because when we have felt hurt in the past, or systematically, continually unsupported, it can feel really, really safe to stay tense than to risk that feeling of disappointment, abject disappointment all over again. Part of releasing is relearning that other people can be safe and that connection doesn't always lead to pain. And then the third layer, this is a biggie. Can I trust life itself? Can I trust that there is something holding me, a current carrying me, that I don't have to force every direction? Now, this is not about fate or faith in a religious sense. It's just about remembering that life keeps unfolding, whether we're gripping or not. So letting go is often trusting that we're part of something larger and that the ground won't just disappear when we try and ease our hold. So yes, letting go isn't a mechanical act. It's an act of trust. Trust that your body will find a way to settle. Trust that you can hold yourself through discomfort. Trust that you are supported by connection with others, by life itself. And then, this sense of, oh my God, I don't have to carry this anymore. Letting go doesn't mean we stop showing up. Doesn't mean we're giving in. It means we stop gripping so tightly so that nothing else can reach us. But listen, if letting go still feels impossible, that's okay. Sometimes the first thing we need to release is the expectation that this should be easy. Softening is not an achievement. It's something we attune to. I tend to think of it as a rhythm, and I'll explain what I mean by that. It's not a destination, right? Release, softening, it's not a destination. It's a practice. When we treat something as an achievement, we turn it into yet another self-improvement goal. I should be more released by now. I should be more relaxed by now. I should be better at letting go by now. And that mindset keeps us in the same cycle of effort and judgment that we're trying to escape. But softening into something, softening into you, is not something that you get right. It's just something we have to keep returning to again and again and again. It's like breathing. That's what I mean when I say it's like a rhythm. It's like breathing. There'll be days when you feel open and at ease, and there'll be days when you catch yourself braced all over again. And that's okay. Again, it doesn't mean you failed. It just means you're human. And that whole rhythm of healing is kind of contraction and release over and over until safety becomes the baseline rather than the exception. And then in time, release happens on its own when your body and your heart knows it's safe enough to surrender. And I have this saying, which I love. You don't have to push the river. You just have to stop damming it up. Okay. So wherever you are, just take a moment. Feel your feet on the ground. Actually, don't take a moment if you're driving a car. If you're driving a car, don't do this right now. If you're not driving a car, take a moment. Feel your feet on the ground. Breathe in really gently. And then just let that exhale be a bit longer than the inhale, okay? You don't have to force yourself to let go. Just allow a little more space, a small crack of softness, and trust that it's enough for now. Because the most powerful release isn't going to be a grand letting go. It's simply the moment that you realize I'm safe now and I don't need to grip so tightly anymore. And as you go about the rest of your day, just notice the little moments when you tighten again, you know, with your shoulders lifting or the breath shortening and this overriding sense that you need to get it all right. See if you can soften just by 1 degree. And when you do, just remind yourself, this is a micro moment. And many of these is what healing looks like. Not one big release, but hundreds of tiny permissions to rest, to trust, and to begin again. Okay? All right. Well, I hope that's answered questions. I hope it's given you some tools. I hope it's given you lots of pause for thought. I shall be back next week with another edition of The Big Drink Rethink. I hope you found these perspectives helpful. If you have a question that you'd like me to cover in one of these Q&A episodes, then please email it to coachingquestions@thebigdrinkrethink.com.